Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
When most little boys were running up and down stairs, Ben Dupree was using his arms to pull himself up the wood banister in his home in University Park. His mom, Debbie, knew something was wrong.
I can remember just kind of any step that he would take, just being worried that he was going to fall.
At 9 years old, Ben was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Like an estimated 1 in 3,500 boys, his muscles were beginning to weaken, starting with his hips and thighs. For a while, Ben continued to walk. But after he slipped when he was 15, he decided it was time for a wheelchair.
I kind of was almost in denial, almost kind of ignoring it, pushing it off.
You know it's going towards the decline that you don't want to see, but at the same time, you don't have to grit your teeth every time your son's taking a step.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, sitting in for Chris Boyd. This hour, what gene editing could mean in the treatment of fatal diseases like Duchenne muscular dystrophy. That clip we just heard was from a story I reported. Today, Ben Dupree and his mom, Debbie, are in the studio with me. So is Dr. Eric Olson with the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. He's part of a team using a powerful new gene editing technique to experiment with treatments for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, glad to be here.
So, Dr. Olson, why don't you start off with a little bit of background? Because this, for many people, might be the first time they hear about Duchenne muscular dystrophy. What is the disease?
This is a devastating, life-changing disease. It's inherited by boys from a mutation in the largest gene in the genome, a gene called dystrophin. The dystrophin gene codes for the protein dystrophin, which functions like a shock absorber in all the muscles of our body, and it maintains the integrity of those muscles, both the heart and skeletal muscle, throughout life. When boys inherit a mutation in this gene, it disrupts the production of the dystrophin protein and eventually leads to the degeneration of muscles, which causes these boys to ultimately be wheelchair-bound and creates major problems in life.
And you've explained before, why is it that boys are only affected by this?
The mutation in the dystrophin gene that causes Duchenne muscular dystrophy, DMD, is the gene is located on the X chromosome and is passed on from the mother. Females have two X chromosomes, so they can have one normal one and one with a mutation, so these mothers are normal. But when they pass on one X chromosome to the son, if that X chromosome is the one that has the mutation, the boy will always develop muscular dystrophy. And there are thousands of different mutations in the dystrophin gene that have been shown to cause this disease.
So it isn't just one mutation that you could be looking for. There could be variations.
So far, there's more than 4,500 different mutations that have been identified around the world in boys with muscular dystrophy. So this is a real big challenge.
Debbie, how did you find out that your son Ben had Duchenne muscular dystrophy?
I can remember when he was about 18 months old, noticing that he had more trouble than other young boys walking on the sand. He seemed to develop semi-normally, not enough. You know, the doctors, the pediatrician always says he looks fine. And when he was four, I took him to see a sensory therapist thinking he had low tone. And she worked with him for a while and his muscles really weren't responding, and she suggested I take him to a neurologist. And we had gone a few times. I think it was when he was about seven, actually, that he really started weakening more and was going up the stairs at an angle, compensating with his arms. And we went back to the neurologist and they did some testing, and his CK level, which is a blood marker that's used that shows the muscles are being damaged, was very high. And it took actually over a year to get the confirmation for the diagnosis. But I can remember being in that neurology office 15 years ago in April, And they said, don't go home and look up Duchenne muscular dystrophy because you'll get scared. And, of course, you know, you go home and you look up Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And basically the you know, the internet and everything else said he'd be gone within 10 years or so. And I knew a wheelchair was coming soon. It was heartbreaking.
Now, Ben, you're sitting here listening to this. Is it? You're here still, obviously, and you're doing very well. You're 23. You just graduated from SMU not too long ago, from Southern Methodist University, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is it weird to hear this at all? Or the prognosis that your mom received?
It's weird to think that according to whatever science there was 10, 15 years ago, that like my prognosis was that I wouldn't even be sitting here today. Like that... I just wouldn't be here.
Now, I know that there are varieties of how Duchenne, as you said, there are many different mutations and some are much more severe than others. So is that the explanation, Dr. Olson, for why some boys might be wheelchair bound, some might not make it to be 25, some might?
That's correct. Some mutations, depending on where those mutations reside in the dystrophin protein, can have varying consequences. The ultimate consequence, of course, is degeneration of muscles and lack of mobility. We know the exact mutation in Ben's DNA that's responsible for his disease, and it's somewhat milder than some of the other more severe mutations, but is nevertheless a very serious mutation.
So, Ben, describe how Duchenne muscular dystrophy affects your everyday life. How do you get around? What's different about your daily routine?
Well, it starts, I guess, in the morning. I always have to get up, eat, take medicines, which is usually about maybe 7 to 10 pills, and then a variety of supplements that I take to kind of – like supplements that we aren't necessarily sure do anything, but
– You're hopeful.
Yeah, hopeful. Mm-hmm. As far as like getting around goes, I use a wheelchair all the time. It makes it difficult sometimes when I have to go places that I haven't been before, not knowing if I'll be able to actually go to these places. But as far as getting around is concerned, I think I do pretty well. I drive a van that we had modified, and I'm able to kind of live my everyday life just a little bit differently than most people.
Now, this generally, any disease, but particularly Duchenne muscular dystrophy, I imagine it requires a lot from caregivers, from family, Debbie.
It does. And most of that, I think especially in the younger years, Ben wasn't even really aware of what goes on behind the scenes. Trying to find the best doctors, the best clinics, do my own research to try to figure out, you know, what might be a good option for him, the supplements, deciding when to start prednisone. Right now, steroid treatment is the only real treatment for these boys. And Ben started taking prednisone when he was 10. And that comes with a whole slew of side effects. We have to watch his bone health. It affects their maturity. It affects puberty. It affects their height. They get a Cushnoid, kind of a look that's different about them. So you've got all these different things happening in his body that you're trying to monitor. But then you've got the psychology side of it, too. You've got a young boy that has a terminal disease that's coming into his own thinking and realizing that his body's declining. So you've got everybody else celebrating their milestones of a 12th birthday or a 13th birthday, and there's days when you just can cry. You know, you're just, oh my gosh, another birthday's here. What's the decline going to be this year? And Ben, his mutation is milder, and we're grateful for that. At the same time, I have so many friends, their boys can't lift their arm. Or there's young boys that are dying from heart failure at 3. Or there's just so many different variations and so many different sad stories. And there's also you know, we've been blessed that we were able to work with Ben and get him driving, which is a huge form of independence for a young man. Not many young men with Duchenne can do that. You're hearing stories more and more, but it's very rare. And that's a whole other story with benefits available for social services, and you have to research that
and navigate a whole other world.
Yes.
Constantly. Dr. Olson, how long have researchers known what causes Duchenne muscular dystrophy?
The gene for muscular dystrophy, the dystrophin gene, was discovered about 20 years ago. So we've known for decades now the precise cause of this disorder, but it has resisted all efforts to provide long-term therapeutic benefits.
Why is that? What has been tried and why hasn't anything worked?
There have been many things that have been tried. Many drugs have been tried. There have been gene replacement studies that have been tried. There have been efforts to replace muscle cells in patients. When you think about it, the muscle of your body accounts for 40% of the mass of your body, and also a muscular dystrophy affects the heart. So it's a real big challenge to correct a disease that accounts for such a large percentage of body mass. And another challenge that's been faced with all the therapeutic approaches that have been tried to date is that in every one of them, the mutation that's causing the disease is still present, underlying whatever therapeutic intervention is attempted. And that's really what distinguishes this new gene editing method that we're working on, and that is we now have the ability to correct the exact mutation in the DNA that causes the disease, and that then eradicates the underlying basis for this disease and can, in principle, restore the expression of the dystrophin protein.
So would it be sort of an accurate metaphor? I don't know if you have one you like to say. It's sort of like pulling out weeds but not getting the roots every time you say, oh, maybe we can replace some of the muscle here and there. But really what's beneath, what's causing this growth of this mutation isn't changed.
That's correct. So in all of these prior approaches, the mutation, the change in the DNA that drives the disease is still present. Maybe I can put this into context. Ben has one single letter in his DNA that's been changed. The DNA is the book of life. It contains 3 billion letters in every cell of our body. Just to put that in context, if the human genome, the book of life, has 3 billion letters, the Bible has 3 million letters. So we're talking about 10 times the size of the Bible in terms of information. This new technology enables researchers like ourselves and others to go into the human DNA and change a single letter out of that 3 billion letters and correct it to normal and restore the expression of the dystrophin protein. We've been able to take cells from Ben and convert them into stem cells and then turn those into muscle cells in a dish and correct his exact mutation in his DNA and restore the expression of dystrophin in those cells. So that's a very exciting advance. We've had Ben up to the laboratory to look at his own beating heart cells through a microscope, and we're just so excited about the pace at which this research is moving.
Great. Well, I'm going to ask you more details about how exactly you took those cells and put them into a dish and made them beat in a moment. You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in today for Chris Boyd. This hour, we're talking with Dr. Eric Olson. He's co-director of the Wellstone Muscular Dystrophy Center at UT Southwestern, as well as Ben Dupree and his mom, Debbie. You can join our conversation. Call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. You can also send me a tweet. I'm @LSilverWoman. Thanks so much. We'll be back shortly.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman in for Chris Boyd. For the tens of thousands of boys and young men in the United States diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, there is no magic medicine, no pill to take, no surgery to stop the muscle-wasting disease. There have been many attempts over the years to find a cure, but none have worked. There are new reasons to be hopeful, though, and we're talking about one of them. Gene editing is one. And at Research Today, we're talking with Dr. Eric Olson of UT Southwestern and with Debbie Dupree and her son, Ben. Ben was diagnosed with Duchenne when he was 9 years old. He's 23 years old now. Dr. Olson, describe again, you were just starting to explain how gene editing is a new tool that could be used for in treatment for muscular dystrophy. What was your research?
Gene editing is a new technique that has taken the scientific world by storm. It was first described about 3 years ago and has been rapidly advanced by a number of laboratories. This method makes it possible to go into the DNA sequence of any organism, including a person, and to, with absolute precision, change a single letter or a few letters of the DNA code and eliminate mutations. My lab has studied muscle disease for three decades, and we've developed a deep knowledge of the processes underlying muscle disease. When the gene editing approach was first described just a few years ago, we asked ourselves how we might apply this approach to correcting diseases of muscle, and we felt that Duchenne muscular dystrophy was an ideal case. And so in initial proof-of-concept studies that we did in mice with muscular dystrophy, we showed that we could correct the specific mutation that causes the disease and restore the production of the dystrophin protein in those mice, and this allowed these mice to regain muscular strength and essentially permanently eradicated the disease from these animals.
So how does this work? It can be a little bit confusing to imagine using some tool to go into our DNA and to change a single letter, as you describe it. How do you get to that letter and fix it?
It's a great question. This has been really one of the challenges in the gene therapy field for many years. How can you go into a DNA sequence with 3 billion letters and make a precise change? And the way that that works with this new technology is through what's referred to as a guide strand. This is a short sequence of RNA, which is related to DNA, that can identify the complementary sequence in the DNA, and then it directs an enzyme to that site. The enzyme will then cut the DNA and repair it. Hmm. So this really offers the precision for correction of virtually any types of mutations.
So it's almost like you said guide strand, but I think of a guide dog when you say that goes and sort of hunts down the sequence you're looking for and then it has instructions that say cut here.
That's a great analogy. It can seek out the specific sequence in the sea of DNA and direct the enzyme to cut and correct that specific sequence.
So now I'm curious, when parents like yourself, Debbie, heard about CRISPR-Cas9, this gene editing tool, I don't know if you heard of it a few years ago. Did you think of anything? When was it that this became, oh, maybe this could be something for Duchenne muscular dystrophy?
Ben, actually, when he was studying biochemistry at SMU, saw a sentence a few years ago about this type of research.
Well, what I did was I was first introduced to the research that I might be participating in, I went back and tried to find out what CRISPR-Cas9 was, and I took a biochemistry textbook from my years at SMU that I had used like 2 years ago. It was very recently published, and it had one sentence in a paragraph somewhere about gene editing.
Almost like finding the dystrophin gene in that book.
Yeah, it was almost just like it was new, and they hadn't even put it in this book yet.
And Ben sees the UT Southwestern cardiac team, Dr. Mommen, had mentioned to us. We had previously given Dr. Mommen Ben's mutation report because he was his cardiologist, and because Ben's mutation is rare, several researchers have been interested in it. And actually, Kevin Flanagan, when he was in Utah's in, I think, 2008, is the first one to have found what Ben's specific mutation was. And there's so many different mutations, you have to know what the mutation is to know what type of research might help. So it was, I think, January of 2015 when they drew blood from Ben and explained what they were going to be doing. I didn't really understand it. I'm still trying to understand.
Yes.
And I've followed research, and there's many drugs that are being put in front of the FDA right now. A type of research called exon skipping, which is what they're looking at right now. But those type of drugs you have to give repeatedly to keep the repair going. And again, it's clinical trial, so you don't know if there's going to be any other harm done to the body. That's the big thing, I think, that researchers and the FDA and parents look at. The thing that it's intriguing about this type of research, and Dr. Olson, I know you could probably explain more, but he's mentioned that you only have to do this once. So you don't have to subject your son to multiple treatments through a port of a medication every week. You know, so that aspect of this and the way that they're able to do it, I think, less expensive, and also they're able to divide it up so that certain areas of the gene could be covered by one type of viral vector delivery.
So this has been tried, Dr. Olson, you've tried this in mice and seen success in adult or young mice?
We've done it in young mice, and they've gone on to adulthood and are corrected from the disease.
So their muscles that were degenerating, they stopped degenerating? Did they actually, I don't know, bounce back in any way?
Yes, they do. They not only – it stops the disease in its tracks, and then as the corrected gene begins to produce the dystrophin protein that was lacking in these mice, then they can recover their muscle – the integrity of the muscle and their muscle function.
So Debbie just said that this – the really fascinating or intriguing part of this research is that it's something that potentially you'd only have to use one time. That also seems to me like it would make it much scarier, also much more dangerous, because what if you get it wrong? What if those little nano scissors that you're using cut the wrong DNA segment? Is that possible?
It's a very good question, and this is one of the issues that we are testing now, as are others. And the phenomenon that you're referring to is what's called an off-target effect. Suppose when you deliver the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing components to the mutation in the dystrophin gene, suppose it inadvertently cuts somewhere else or edits somewhere else in the genome, it could make an adverse mutation there. We have not seen evidence for this type of off-target effect so far in mice, although some evidence for off-target effects has been seen in cells in a tissue culture dish. And so I think one of the key issues going forward is going to be a demonstration of safety, and we're very mindful of that because we want to make sure that there's no missteps in the advancement of this technology. So that's one of the areas that we're looking at.
How do you move from testing in mice to testing in humans?
Well, there are several challenges, and they include scale up in size. A mouse is not a man. So it will require increasing the efficiency of delivery of the gene editing components. One of the really exciting aspects of the recent publication from our group on this topic is that we were able to engineer the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing components into a virus that specifically infects muscle and heart. And so when we infected mice with that virus, all their muscles were able to take up the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing components and to edit the DNA specifically in those muscles. So we're quite excited about the ability to use this virus to deliver these gene editing components in humans. And fortuitously, the Food and Drug Administration has already approved the use of this virus for delivery of other genes in humans, and it is safe. So scale-up is going to be one area that we're hoping to advance. Another is just to optimize the efficiency. And I think the third will be safety, safety, safety. We want to be sure that this doesn't have any adverse effects on these young patients.
So how far in the future would you imagine a human clinical trial of this?
I think we can really envision realistically moving this toward humans within the next several years. Certainly within 5 years, I can easily imagine that human trials can be initiated, maybe sooner. I think ultimately the ideal type of initial patient for testing this sort of therapy would be a patient who's early in the course of the disease and is still mobile and still has significant muscle function, such that we could potentially slow or prevent the progression of the disease. That's, of course, going to be easier than to reverse the disease once it's late in the course of the disease.
Now, Ben, right now you are 23, you're doing well, but you're in a wheelchair. So this is something that maybe wouldn't have, I don't know, as direct impact for you. It would be for other generations.
For me, it would really, like, a treatment like this would kind of bring a little bit of security and peace of mind, thinking that my condition won't keep deteriorating more, like, as rapidly as it is. But as you're saying, yeah, being already 23 years old, the potential for, like, muscle recovery is a lot less than, say, someone who was just diagnosed receiving some sort of treatment like this. I think it really does bring, like, kind of hope to those, like, the parents of those children and to families. But for me specifically, it's kind of just it's exciting to see, and kind of as just a it would probably increase my lifespan, and I look at that as a positive.
Are you watching other treatments, other drugs that are being developed that I don't know if they have any faster track or aren't necessarily gene editing, but you're paying close attention to?
I tend to follow just most of the treatments more from a personal interest standpoint. I have a degree in biochemistry, so I find the genetics behind everything really fascinating, and I like to know how all these new treatments work and what they're trying to do. So I keep up with most of the new drugs, like the exon skipping therapies and the different ways they're trying to attack the mutation. And it's like I look at my own mutation as a source of almost fascination, in that it's very different than a lot of other mutations in the dystrophin gene. And I look at that and seeing how, like, I used to think about how it could be corrected. And it was in ways similar to the CRISPR-Cas9 system of going in, changing it. And it's almost surreal to see that actually happening.
That is. That's fascinating. So you spent time thinking about how you might go in and actually edit that.
Yeah.
Ben has really had an important impact on the advancement of this technology. I mean, by providing his cells and allowing us to study his mutation and correct it, we have learned a lot about this disorder. And simply interacting with Ben has been an inspiration for those of us who are working in the laboratory.
It must be fascinating as well to have someone who you can work with who understands and who's studied biochemistry Ben, you're really curious about this, and you're right now, are you pursuing a master's?
I'm trying to get a master's degree in genetic counseling, because I hope to kind of be a bridge between, like, this kind of new research and patients and their families, in that a lot of this stuff is really hard to understand say, for someone who's new to like all of this, and to have someone who can explain or help them better understand what research advancements they might be able to look at or what treatments might be available for their children. And it kind of the master's degree I'm hoping to pursue really would help be a platform with which I could do that.
That explaining, which is tough work. Do you find that there's a lot of misconceptions or what are the most frustrating about Duchenne or that you have to explain to people?
As a parent, I think a lot of the frustration and also, you know, I feel blessed that Ben's mutation, you know, you find yourself conflicted because Ben, his mutation is milder, and it's wonderful to be able to see him be a role model. I do some outreach with the community, and parents that just receive this diagnosis for their child can see somebody like Ben and have some hope, even if that hope is short-lived. When you get this diagnosis, when it's your child, it's heartbreaking and it shakes you to your core. And for some parents to be able to see somebody like Ben and go, oh my gosh, there's a potential that he could still lift his arms or still go to school or do something. It really gives a lot of hope. And any parent, you know, with these type of drugs that are coming up, any parent who has a child, whether they're just losing the ability to walk or they can't lift their arm or be independent in their own caregiving, eating, you know, picking up a soda can, those type of things that we all take for granted. So you ask any parent or any young boy and they just want to stop the disease where it is. Yes, it would be lovely to be able to regenerate muscle, but if you could just stop it, stop the decline.
I'm Lauren Silverman, in today for Chris Boyd. You're listening to Think, and this hour we're talking about gene editing with Dr. Eric Olson. He's chairman of molecular biology at UT Southwestern, Ben Dupree, and his mother, Debbie. Ben was diagnosed with Duchenne when he was 9. You can join our conversation, 800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. Imagine you found a pair of scissors that could trim the very building blocks of life. That's essentially what the new gene editing tool called CRISPR-Cas9 is capable of. For people with genetic diseases like Huntington's or muscular dystrophy, fixing a genetic error could mean a cure. This hour, we're talking about that possibility with Ben Dupree. He was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy when he was 9, with his mom, Debbie, and with Dr. Eric Olson of UT Southwestern Medical Center. You can call to join the conversation, 800-933-5372, or email think@kera.org. So let's talk a little bit more about this gene editing tool. Now, is it accurate to call it CRISPR-Cas9? What does that even stand for, Dr. Olson?
Well, CRISPR-Cas9 is an acronym for a very complicated molecular biology term, so we won't bore the listeners with all the details.
Good. Thank
but
you.
Suffice it to say that this is a gene editing mechanism that has existed all the way to bacteria and was initially used by bacteria as an anti-immunity mechanism, and now molecular biologists have essentially been able to hijack this biochemical mechanism and use it in human cells to correct virtually any type of mutation that exists in the human genome.
I got a question on Twitter asking about what you think, Dr. Olson, about the patent controversy surrounding CRISPR. Is there a concern over patent, and who can use this technique?
There is certainly a lot of controversy ongoing as to who the primary inventors of the CRISPR-Cas9 technology.
It's quite a claim to fame.
Yes, it is, and how that will ultimately be ascribed. Our own group, we're not concerning ourselves with patent issues so much at the moment, although we have filed for a patent on our gene editing technique in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. But we are simply moving this technology as fast as we possibly can towards humans, and we will let the lawyers sort out the rest.
You can only take on so much.
Suffice it to say that if CRISPR-Cas gene editing is shown to be effective in correcting muscular dystrophy, I think the patent landscape will be trivial because there will be so much energy and effort put forward on this that no one's going to be wasting time thinking about those issues, I hope.
Now, Ben, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you are pursuing a degree to become a genetic counselor. What role do genetic counselors have in talking with patients or families of patients who have diseases like Duchenne's?
Well, in some cases, maybe the person who refers you to get the genetic testing to find out your mutation, or might be the person who relays the diagnosis, and at the same time is someone that has to explain to the parents or the person with the disease what they'll have to do to manage it and what the layout of their life looks like from that point onwards, of what treatments are available, what you need to do on a daily basis to maintain your health, what might be different between you and someone else, what might be different between you and a person who is otherwise healthy.
So it's really a combination of being a counselor as well as a doctor, as just to help people really understand their condition from the genetic standpoint.
Yeah. And there are other paths that a genetic counselor can follow, such as being involved with research or being in biotechnology, or maybe someone who helps enlist people in research studies, helps explain what different research is around and what sort of clinical trials are available.
Oh, also, which is really difficult, I've heard, to figure out which clinical trials to sign up for, which to try, which to navigate.
Yeah, and with 4,500 different mutations, it's hard for parents to understand what might work for their child when it's there's tons of different places that mutations happen, many different drugs that target different mutations, and it's just a huge maze. Almost.
With respect to the 4,500 mutations, I think it might be worthwhile for me to mention that the number of mutations that have been identified is a real challenge, and we've tried to confront that challenge in our own laboratory. Most recently, we've been able to cluster these 4,500 mutations into each of 12 different categories. Mm. So now we can use a single gene editing technique to correct a very, very large numbers of mutations simultaneously. And we believe that each of these 12 categories can account for about 80% of the known human mutations worldwide responsible for DMD.
Wow. You can join our conversation. We're talking about gene editing. You can call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Tony in Duncanville. Tony, hi.
Hi. This is Tony calling from Duncanville, Texas. I wanted to ask your guest if gene editing could also be used for other mutation-related diseases like sickle cell.
Great question, Dr. Olson.
I can't hear anything.
Oh, you couldn't hear that. I'm sorry. He asked, I'll repeat the question for you. He wanted to know whether there was you could apply this research to other genetic disorders like sickle cell.
Great question. In principle, this technology can be applied to any type of disease for which the mutation is known. Sickle cell would be a great example. Huntington's disease, ALS, are other great examples that we imagine will ultimately be treated by this gene editing technology.
And so why – you mentioned earlier that you thought Duchenne muscular dystrophy was one that you wanted to focus on at your lab. Why that one or other labs looking at these other genetic diseases?
Other diseases are also being looked at now with respect to gene therapy, but DMD seemed to be a real optimal test candidate because it's a single gene in boys. You only have to correct the one gene, and we know the consequences of that mutation. And so we knew a lot. There's a lot of background knowledge about how that gene works as well, so it seemed to be a real optimal test case.
Interesting. Now, Debbie, is there any way that if you had seen a genetic counselor before, I don't know when you first saw a genetic counselor, that might have helped you understand or plan for Ben's treatment?
The Duchenne landscape has changed so much in 15 years. I know at one point I did talk to a genetic counselor. In fact, I think it took probably 7 or 8 years for them to find his specific mutation, and they needed to find his mutation in order to test me. I'm not a carrier. There's many different ways this mutation can occur in these young boys.
So usually it's passed down, if I understand, from the mother, but you're saying you're not a carrier of the disease.
I'm not a carrier. My daughter is going to be tested. Dr. Olson, you can explain more about the genomic or germline mosaic issues with mutations, but there is a possibility that all my eggs were mutated, so my daughter could be a carrier. We were joking that we would wait till Ben was a genetic counselor and just have him do the test. Now, when people or young boys are diagnosed or found to have this disease, or if they had or if the woman that's the carrier has a nephew or any other relative that might have had this disease, they can pinpoint it pretty quick. And what they're doing as part of the Wellstone research is identifying the carrier moms, because they do seem to have some cardiac issues. And so they're hoping to identify the carrier moms, at least in Dallas, and to get them some care and go from there.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment now. Let's go to Wayne in Fort Worth. Hi, Wayne.
Hello. How's this going about ALS and whether they thought that we would be applicable to ALS and whether it would be more of a challenge to use it for ALS?
Great question, Wayne. So he wants to know, Dr. Olson, if ALS might be something you could also use this for.
It's a good question. I think ALS might eventually be a disorder that could be treated by gene editing, but ALS has several challenges that aren't shared with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. In particular, Duchenne muscular dystrophy is caused by mutations that are always in the same gene, the dystrophin gene. ALS can be caused by mutations in many genes, and in a large number of cases, in fact, the majority of cases, we don't know all the genes that are responsible for ALS. So I think there will be additional research needed to further pinpoint the mutations in ALS before gene editing could be widely applied to that disorder.
There must be so many people with different genetic diseases and diseases who ask either you, Dr. Olson, or anyone who hears about this as, will this work for me? Could this work for me?
This technology has really surprised me with respect to the rate at which it has just penetrated the general public. Not a day goes by when I don't receive an email from a family or a patient somewhere in the world with Duchenne muscular dystrophy wanting to know when this could be applied to their mutation and their disease. So there's really so much excitement about all the potential of this new technology.
Is this technology most advanced in the U.S. right now, or is it in other countries where it's being used, perhaps in humans already?
It is being applied. Many countries are moving forward on this technology, and I think the first efforts with gene editing in humans, which are ongoing right now, will be done in cells of the body in patients. There's another form of gene editing called germline editing, which is quite a controversial type of editing in which one can actually change the DNA in the germline and pass that on to all subsequent generations. And there's many ethical and other restrictions placed on that type of gene editing at the moment.
So this type of gene editing, though, is something that, that isn't passed on then, for example, if you correct for it in a boy?
That's correct. It's not passed on. It simply corrects the gene in the tissues of that patient, but not in the sperm from that patient.
So, Ben, in your free time, do you spend reading and trying to understand and explain this to your friends to how all this genetic counts for how all this genetic variation works? Is it something you get questions about a lot?
Yeah, sometimes I'll talk to my friends about when I find something that's exciting. I kind of tend to try to tell everyone that's close to me what's going on and what's exciting about it and what potential it might have. Like hearing about CRISPR-Cas9, I went to one of my closest friends and was really excited about it, telling him all the potentials for it and what it could mean for me.
And Debbie, you're involved in some advocacy work with which group is it?
Parent Project Muscular Dystrophy.
And what is it that you do with them?
I am an outreach coordinator in North Texas, and I try to help new diagnosis families, and we try to have some meetings to keep the families connected. And, you know, we have groups on the internet where we can all talk about basic information. You know, somebody might have heard something, they could ask another parent, or, I mean, the list of minute details in everyday life when you're facing a disability is huge. So traveling, you know, trying to figure out, you know, okay, I've got some extra wheelchair parts. Does anybody need those? One good thing about Parent Project, it has almost become a family. They understand what we're going through. When we have conferences and all the family members are there and the boys can feel kind of normal to be around just everybody else, nobody has to ask to push somebody. It just kind of a hand reaches out to do it almost automatically. So it's become a great support mechanism, and I'm happy to be able to give that support at this point.
About how many boys or young men, if you know, in this area are there who are affected by Duchenne muscular dystrophy?
I think in Texas, the groups that we know, I think there's probably about 300. Mm-hmm. I think I've heard, and Ben, you may know, I know there's at least 15,000 in the United States alone.
We're speaking with Debbie Dupree and her son, Ben. Ben was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy when he was 9. He's 23 years old now, going on to become a genetic counselor, and Dr. Eric Olson of UT Southwestern. Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy, with help on the phones today from Tori Whitley. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington, and you can contact us via email at think@kera.org. Thank you all for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for listening. Have a great day.